The British Empire had been under Jewish control for a century by this point, with the Jewish banking dynasties. Many such Jews had also become part of the British nobility, such as the Rothschilds. The Rothschild family, the British branch of the family, was elevated into the British nobility at the request of Queen Victoria. It has been argued that during the 19th century, the family possessed by far the largest private fortune in the world and by far the largest fortune in modern world history, even having the Jews in control of the British government directly, such as Disraeli, Benjamin Disraeli, 1st Earl of Beaconsfield, KG, PC, FRS, 21st of December 1804, the 19th of April 1881, was a British Prime Minister, parliamentarian, conservative statesman, and literary figure. He started from comparatively humble origins. He served in government for 3 decades, twice as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Although his father had him baptized to Anglicanism at age 12, he was nonetheless Britain's first and thus far only Prime Minister who was born into a Jewish family originally from Italy. They did not count on the fact that Hitler was a genius who had created a modern army and lightning war tactics, hence why Poland and then France both fell within 2 weeks each. Even then, after what the wicked Jews had done to the Germans in Europe, Hitler still asked for and gave fair terms and friendship, not as a conqueror. France agreed with the Vichy nationalist government, but England refused. Poland remained under occupation given what had happened. Poland had already invaded Germany several times before in the Weimar period, but they were treated with respect under Hitler's direct orders. There were no revenge actions taken towards the Polish populace for Bromberg. The Soviet Union, which had attacked from the east, taking full advantage of the situation for a power grab, did, however, commit genocide on the Polish population, the most famous example being the Katyn Massacre. The Katyn Massacre, also known as the Katyn Forest Massacre, was a mass execution of Polish nationals carried out by the Soviet secret police, the NKVD, in May 1940. It was based on Lavrenty Beria's proposal to execute all members of the Polish officer corps, dated 5th of March 1940. This official document was then approved and signed by the Soviet Politburo, including its leader, Joseph Stalin. The number of victims is estimated to be at 22,000, the most commonly cited number being 21,768. The victims were murdered in the Katyn Forest in Russia, the Kalnin and Kharkov prisons, and elsewhere. About 8,000 were officers taken prisoner during the 1939 Soviet invasion of Poland, the rest being Polish doctors, professors, lawmakers, police officials, and other public servants arrested for allegedly being intelligence agents, gendarmes, landowners, saboteurs, factory owners, lawyers, officials, and priests. Since Poland's conscription system required every unexempted university graduate to become a reserve officer, the NKVD was able to round up much of the Polish intelligentsia. The Battle of Britain began in defense against Kosher Churchill sending bombers across the English Channel to bomb German cities and towns first. Hitler warned him to stop such actions. Churchill refused, and after several more times, Hitler sent the German Air Force across the channel and then only to bomb the British Air Force's bases to cripple Kosher Churchill and harass RAF terror bombers from attacking any more German civilian centers. During a night attack, one of the German bombers, thinking they were over the channel already, dropped their excess bombs in order to have enough fuel left to make it back to home. Sadly, they were over a British city, but since the blackouts were in effect, they had no way of knowing. They worked to avoid any civilian casualties to the point that there were under 21,000 for the entire battle, even when they were in the position where they could have leveled half of England. This was after Hitler had bent over backwards trying to make peace with England from the 1930s and on, as already mentioned, even sparing the entire English army at Dunkirk. The hidden part of the air war, Talmudic protocols in action. February 13th and 14th of 1945, Holocaust over Dresden, known as the Florence of the North. Dresden was a hospital city for wounded soldiers. Not one military unit, not one anti-aircraft battery was deployed in the city. Together with the 60,000 refugees from Breslau, Dresden was filled with nearly 1.2 million people. Churchill had asked for suggestions how to blaze 600,000 refugees. He wasn't interested how to target military installations 60 miles outside of Dresden. More than 700,000 phosphorus bombs were dropped on 1.2 million people, one bomb for every two people. The temperature in the center of the city reached 1,600 degrees centigrade. More than 260,000 bodies and residues of bodies were counted, but those who perished in the center of the city could not be traced. Approximately 500,000 children, women, the elderly, wounded soldiers, and the animals in the zoo were slaughtered in one night. In fact, little had been done to provide the ancient city of artists and craftsmen with anti-aircraft defenses. One squadron of planes had been stationed in Dresden for a while, but the Luftwaffe decided to move the aircraft to another area where they would be of use. A gentleman's agreement seemed to prevail, designating Dresden as an open city. This provided the Jews with another easy opportunity to mass murder as many innocent people as possible. 100,000 people died in the first 20 minutes of the attack. One eyewitness survived told of seeing young women carrying babies running up and down the streets, their dresses and hair on fire, screaming until they fell down, or the collapsing buildings fell on top of them. As the German government stated after the attack, Dresden had no war industries. It was a place of culture and clinics. What distinguished this raid was the cold-blooded ruthlessness in which it was carried out. U.S. Mustangs appeared low over the city, strafing anything that moved, including a column of rescue vehicles rushing to the city to evacuate survivors. One assault was aimed at the banks of the Elbe River, where refugees had huddled during the horrible night. Dresden's citizens barely had time to reach their shelters. The first bomb fell at 10:09 p.m., which is 22:09 Universal Time. The attack lasted 24 minutes, leaving the inner city a raging sea of fire. Precision saturation bombing had created the desired firestorm. There was a three-hour pause between the first and second raids. The lull had been calculated to lure civilians from their shelters into the open area again. To escape the flames, tens of thousands of civilians had crowded into the Grosser Garten, a magnificent park nearly 1.5 miles square. The second raid came about at 1:22 a.m. with no warning. Twice as many bombers returned with a massive load of incendiary bombs. The second wave was designed to spread the raging firestorm into the Grosser Garten. It was a complete success. Within a few minutes, a sheet of flame ripped across the grass, uprooting trees and littering the branches of others with everything from bicycles to human limbs. For days afterward, they remained bizarrely strewn about as grim reminders of Allied sadism. At the start of the second air assault, many were still huddled in tunnels and cellars, waiting for the fires of the first attack to die down. At 1:30 a.m., an ominous rumble reached the ears of the commander of a labor service convoy sent into the city on a rescue mission. He described it this way. The detonation shook the cellar walls. The sound of the explosions mingled with a new stranger sound which seemed to come closer and closer. The sound of a thundering waterfall. It was the sound of the mighty tornado howling in the inner city. Others hiding below ground died, but they died painlessly. They simply glowed bright orange and blue in the darkness as the heat intensified. They either disintegrated into cinders or melted into a thick liquid, often 3 or 4 feet deep in spots. Shortly after 10:30 on the morning of February 14th, the last raid swept over the city. American bombers pounded the rubble that had been Dresden for a steady 38 minutes, but this attack was not nearly as heavy as the first two. And I also want to interject here how the Jews, it's in their Kabbalah, and God, it says God, that's an allegory, and it's also a secret code word for the Jews in their own writings, in their Kabbalah. And they always say God consults the Torah before he creates. And that means that the Jews use the Bible and, you know, their Torah. They use the Bible and their Torah to, in Hebrew, do rituals against us. And they reduce Dresden to ashes on Ash Wednesday. And if you see how the two correlate, for those of you who are experienced and knowledgeable about witchcraft and the workings of the mind and soul, and they use all the energy from Christian believers and Muslims and they channel it into that. And this is extremely sad. And it was done on Ash Wednesday, and that's how they use. That's not all. There's been many more examples. One audio sermon is the Bible, a book of Jewish witchcraft, and I strongly encourage everybody to listen to that or to read the webpage on exposingchristianity.com. Okay. In the last year of the war, Dresden had become a hospital town. During the previous night's massacre, heroic nurses had dragged thousands of crippled patients to the Elbe. The low-flying Mustangs machine-gunned those helpless patients, as well as thousands of old men, women, and children who had escaped the city. When the last plane left the sky, Dresden was a scorched ruin, its blackened streets filled with corpses. The city was spared no horror. A flock of vultures escaped from the zoo and fattened on the carnage. Rats swarmed over the piles of corpses. A Swiss citizen described his visit to Dresden 2 weeks after the raid. I could see torn off arms and legs, mutilated torsos and heads which had been wrenched from their bodies and rolled away. In places the corpses were still lying so densely that I had to clear a path through them in order not to tread on arms and legs. Kurt Vonnegut was an American prisoner of war being held in Dresden when it was bombed in 1945 and wrote a famous anti-war novel, Slaughterhouse-5, named after the area he took refuge in to survive the bombing of the city. And I also want to mention that Slaughterhouse-5 was made into a movie, and I highly recommend it. He stated after the attack that the city looked like the surface of the moon. In December of 1944, Vonnegut was captured by the German army and became a prisoner of war. In Slaughterhouse-5, he described how he narrowly escaped the death a few months later in the firebombing of Dresden. "Yes, by your people, the English, may I say," he insists. "You guys burnt the place down, turned it into a single column of flame. More people died there in the firestorm in that one big flame than died in Hiroshima and Nagasaki combined. I'm fond of your people on occasion, but I was just thinking about Bomber Harris, who believed in attacks on civilian populations to make them give up." And I also want to note Harris is a Jewish name. A hell of a lot of Royal Air Force guys were ashamed of what Harris had made them do. And that's really sportsmanship, and, of course, the Brits are famous for being good sports. Note, Harris is a Jewish name. As one RAF member who took part in the attack stated afterwards, "I found myself making comments to the crew. Oh God, these poor people. It was completely uncalled for. You can't justify it. Here is an example of a minor RAF raid." During the latter stages of World War II, Fort Syme, a town in southwestern Germany, was bombed a number of times. The largest raid and one of the most devastating area bombardments of the war was carried out by the Royal Air Force on the evening of February 23, 1945. As many as 17,600 people, or 31.4% of the town's population, were killed in the air raid. About 83% of the town's buildings were destroyed. Two-thirds of the complete area of Fort Syme, and between 80 and 100% of the inner city. The RAF bomber, or aerial genocide force, took some of the highest death rates of any service in the war for Britain. Because the Germans fought so desperately against the terror bombing strikes on their people, German fighter pilots who crashed their burning shot apart fighters along with themselves into a RAF bomber just to stop one more of them from being able to murder any more of their people. It was that horrific of a situation. The situation in the East, Jewish aggression on display. Hitler knew that fighting a defensive war against the Red Army was suicide, as they would be facing up to 30 million troops, thousands of tanks, planes, and heavy guns. If the Red Army was not struck while still mobilizing for their invasion, Western Europe was doomed. Jewry was playing their big red hand as they were the Soviet Union. Even Stalin was a Yid. His real name, Dugashvili, in Georgian means son of a Jew. The Eastern Struggle, Jewish aggression on display. The invasion of the Soviet Union was done after German intelligence informed them with the overwhelming evidence that the Soviet Union was planning to attack them in the spring of 1941, and yes, the entire Red Army was mobilizing on the borders. It was too large to be exercised alone. It was an invasion force. Operation Sea Lion, the invasion of England, was nothing more than a ruse to distract the Soviets from the fact they knew and were preparing for a first survival strike. German Chief of Staff Franz Halder stated, "Russia was preparing for an attack on Germany. We know today from good sources that he, Hitler, was right about that." At Nuremberg, General Winter testified under oath, "We had at the time the subjective impression that we were striking into an offensive deployment in progress." Senior General Jodl is on record stating that Hitler never even mentioned the ideal of Lebensraum in 1940 when the discussion on a preemptive war with the Soviet Union came up. This is an open statement to the damning fact of how much the Jewish lie machine has worked to rewrite history. The war was defensive, not ideological, on their part, as stated by Senior General Jodl, who testified at Nuremberg. "The Führer has never named in my presence even just one hint of a reason other than purely strategic. Hitler, by Jodl's testimony, made the following statements to him many times over. "There is no doubt now that England puts her hopes in this last mainland proxy. My note, Soviet Union. Otherwise, she would have already called off the war after Dunkirk. Agreements have certainly already been made. The Russian deployment is unmistakable. One day, suddenly, we shall be either coldly blackmailed or attacked." Churchill, in 1940, purposely rejected Germany's offer of peace and voted to keep the war going. Sir Stafford Cripps meeting with the Soviets in Moscow, they had promised the Soviet Union was going to come into the war on Britain's side. The war started because the Jews incited it. The Axis army was welcomed as a liberator across Eastern nations. Jewish rule under communism had already murdered over 20 million innocent Gentiles. 7 million died in the Ukrainian Holocaust alone, which was overseen by the Jew Lazar Moiseyevich Kakanovich on orders from the Jew Stalin. Millions more died in a system of death camps called gulags, each run by a Jewish commissar. The Jews just worked them to death on purpose, as shooting them was too quick. One of the camps, on the camps from survivors, these are quotes, "The central aim was to kill off the prisoners," as one commandant put it quite openly. "If you complain or write anything, heaven forbid, they will frame you for an attempted escape or for something else, and they will shoot you like a dog. They, the Jews, line us up naked and barefoot at 22 degrees below zero and keep us outside for up to 1 hour. It is difficult to describe all the chaos and terror that is going on in Kemi, Solovsky, and other sections of the concentration camps. They forced inmates to eat their own feces. Tens of millions of innocent Gentiles died in those Jewish-run camps. The Jew, being the master of projection, lied and took in what they did to the Gentiles in the gulags and claimed it was what the Germans did to them. In fact, reading the reports and letters of the Axis soldiers on the first waves going into the former communist-controlled areas, it was the citizens themselves who were rounding up and punishing the Jews in general, as they all knew the commissars were local Jews, and even anti-Semitism was literally the death penalty under the Reds. The kosher NKVD, before running away, had rounded up any Gentile they could and brutally murdered them in droves with everything from axes to bullets in pure Talmudic vile. When the family members found the bodies stacked like wood in the courtyards and as mentioned, they knew it was the Jews, so they took revenge. It was the Axis troops that ended the pogroms, not started them. Unlike the kosher claims, and yes, all commissars given the disgusting crimes against humanity the Axis troops had found they were committing, were ordered to be shot on sight. The so-called partisans in the East, as in the West, were actually all Jews, especially in the beginning. The Western branch of the resistance, Red Terror movements, like the famed French Resistance, was almost to a person, all Jewish. Hence why the Axis had to round up and imprison every Jew they could find, as they knew the Jews working against them as a terrorist racial collective behind the lines at the front. Axis Europe was fighting for its life at this point. With the opening of the KGB archives, it was discovered that the Russian populations living in the Axis-liberated territories worked in full cooperation with the Germans against the Jewish Red Beast. These people had lived under the Red Heel and had lost many loved ones to it. Contrary to popular belief, there is never a Russian Revolution, but the white Russians, nationalists, fighting desperately against an international Jewish takeover of whom the Red Armies were mainly armed with, Jews from the Pale and abroad, and tens of thousands of Chinese mercenaries were bought and shipped from the East by the Jews and General Dregs. The Germans worked with the Russian communities and other Eastern communities and built them hospitals, new farms, homes, community centers, and schools. They liberated numerous gulags, freed the prisoners, and helped restore them to health. They returned them to their homes and families and built a real spirit of friendship with them. In places like Ukraine, as in Russia, they worked with the locals to help uncover mass graves of thousands of murdered innocents by the Jewish NKVD, helping to identify as many as possible and return them to their families for proper burials. When investigating the crimes and bringing any responsible who were still in the area to justice. As it turned out, 99.9% of those brought to justice all happened to be Jews. No surprise there. It was also found during the investigation that the killings of the populace by the Jewish-led Reds were selective targeting of the best and brightest elements of the Gentile community. Upon their murders, any property they did have was given to the local Jewish populations, right out of the Talmud. The Germans helped to create in Russian and other Eastern nations a new core of National Socialist communities, which was Himmler's actual plan for the East if war did occur. The East was to be developed into a Slavic National Socialist state that would be part of a larger pan-European confederation for the multi-cooperation, betterment, and protection of the common Indo-European cultures, peoples, and nations. Another event that the opening of the KGB archives recorded was the majority of civilian deaths on the Eastern Front were literally mass liquidations of the Russian and other populaces executed by the Bolsheviks, as they knew the populaces were working with the Axis for their mutual liberation and freedom in the liberated areas. They sought to deny the Axis any material, industrial, agricultural, or human. Their scorched earth policy was applied to the human populations as well. Entire areas were wiped clean of all life. Millions of Eastern European Gentiles volunteered to fight against the Judeo-Bolsheviks and the Red Army in the East. 50,000 white Russians fought with the 6th Army at Stalingrad alone, and they all fought to end that in that desperate battle. Hundreds of thousands more Western and Central Europeans volunteered to help to fight in the Waffen-SS alongside their Eastern brethren against Judeo-Bolshevism on the Eastern Front. They fought so fiercely even in the face of overwhelming odds. Kosher Stalin was begging his fellow Jews to open up a second front in the West. Only a tiny percent of the Waffen-SS were German nationals. The vast majority were Europeans from every free nation in Europe. Even some English fought in their ranks. Hitler had accomplished for the first time in known history what no other man had ever done before. He had united European nations and peoples to fight together as one against the Jewish monster in the East, and the whole of global Jewry as well. Europeans had decided they wanted to be free and were fighting by the millions to be free from Jewry. Beyond that, even Indians, East Indians, blacks, Japanese, and Tibetan Gentile warriors fought in the Axis ranks as honored Gentile brothers in arms. It is a little known fact that Hitler and the Dalai Lama were allies, and thousands of dead Tibetans in German uniforms were pulled from the rubble of Berlin, where they died fighting with thousands of other free Gentile warriors. And there's pictures here, Indian troops who fought in Hitler's forces, and there are Asian troops who fought in Hitler's forces, and even black troops who fought in Hitler's forces. And he had bases in sub-Saharan Africa, so he was friends. Hitler was not a racist. He was a separatist. He wasn't a racist. Okay. In the memoirs of a black soldier who served as a combat soldier in Hitler's army, he stated the black and white soldiers shared the same barracks, ate at the same mess tables, had equal rights and respects, and were friends. While blacks serving in the American army were treated as inferiors and not even allowed to eat at the same table as whites, National Socialism, as Hitler stated, is based on racial respect. Okay, and there's also another picture here of Hitler meeting with Indian hero and nationalist leader Chandra Bose. The famed Indian nationalist leader Subhas Chandra Bose met personally with both Hitler and Himmler, and also spoke to large meetings of Axis leaders in Europe and was received by them as a hero. Bose went to the thousands of Indian POWs in German custody who were captured as part of the British Army in North Africa who had refused to break their oath of service to England. After speaking with them en masse and telling them the truth, thousands of Indians volunteered to fight for National Socialism and became National Socialists, as Bose himself was in essence, and were treated as equals by the Germans. Bose even wanted to model important aspects of National Socialist Germany for the new Indian nation he hoped to create. Today, all across India, there are thousands of murals devoted to Bose, who is a celebrated hero. Many murals depicted the iconic meeting of Bose with both Hitler, both shaking the other's hand. In the memoirs of a black soldier who had fought in the German army, he wrote that in the American army, black soldiers were segregated and treated as second-class people, where in the German army himself and other black troops lived side by side. Where in the German army himself and other black troops lived side by side with the white soldiers, ate at the same mess tables, and had the same rights and privileges, and were treated with equal respect to the white soldiers. National Socialism is built upon racial respect and common values of kin altruism. The Jews have lied about Hitler and projected their vulgar racism onto him falsely. Hitler's own statements on the subject of actual racialism. I promise you, I am quite free from all racial hatred. It is, in my case, undesirable that one race should mix with other races. Except for a few gratuitous successes, which I am prepared to admit, systematic crossbreeding has never produced good results. Its desire to remain racially pure is proof of the vitality and good health of a race. Pride in one's own race is also a normal and healthy sentiment. I have never regarded the Chinese or Japanese as being inferior to ourselves. They belong to ancient civilizations, and I admit freely that their past history is superior to our own. They have the right to be proud of their past, just as we have the right to be proud of the civilization to which we belong. Indeed, I believe the more steadfast the Chinese and Japanese remain in the pride of their race, the easier I shall find it to get on with them. Quote by Adolf Hitler. Hitler wanted each Gentile race to preserve their own unique genetic line and culture and work to become the best people they could be in the cosmos. That is real care for the healthy order of life, where the Jew wants to destroy it. Waffen-SS General Leon Dergele stated, German racialism meant rediscovering the creative values of their own race, rediscovering their culture. It was a search for excellence, a noble ideal. National Socialist racialism, it was not against other races. It was for its own race. It aimed at defending and improving its race, and wished that all other races did the same for themselves. National Socialist racialism was loyal to the German race and totally respected all other races.